Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that keeps the ball in the ball yard in Mexico City. I'm Jake Mintz, that's Jordan Schusterman, and we won't allow a home run in the thin air.
Oh, this pod's ground ball rate is, I guess, not through the roof. That would not be the phrase you would use to say when describing a ground ball rate. But yeah, we're going to keep it on the ground in this here episode of Baseball Barbacast. It's May, Jake. May 1st. My goodness. We have made it to the second month of the season. I guess the third month of the season, you know, with opening day starting on March 31st. But Jake, we have a lot to get to. We have a lot to
get boy.
To. First of all, there was so much great ball this weekend. So much great ball on Sunday in particular. We had all these teams streaking in all kinds of different directions. They had some winning streaks broken, some losing streaks, of course, broken. We will certainly talk about the White Sox. But let's begin there. Jake, how was your weekend personally? And then how were all the baseball teams' weekends?
My weekend was wet, personally, because it did not stop raining here in New York City. I was supposed to go to Mets Braves on Saturday and Mets Braves on Sunday. And instead, I went to my couch on both days. So it was a gray, dreary weekend. The sun is out here in Nueva York City. So I am ready for a brand new day of baseball. Your weekend was good, Jordan?
Yeah, no, it was good. I got to be out a little bit. I was visiting my fiance's family over in Northwest Ohio, but I also did get to see some real baseball with my eyes. It was Division III baseball. It wasn't Major League Baseball. So I wasn't on my couch, you know, consuming as much ball on TV as you were, but I caught up and I'm ready to talk about it. So let's review as we like to do on Mondays. Let's just tell us the results. Tell everyone who won the series and who lost the series.
The Marlins sweep the Cubs at home, about as raucous an atmosphere at Marlins Park as I can remember for some time. The vibes are good in Miami for now. The Dodgers sweeping the Cardinals at home in Los Angeles. We will get to the disastrous Redbirds a little bit later. And then a little mini sweep, a little dusting. Padres taking both games over the Giants in Mexico City, the first of which was just bonkers. Just a great reminder why there is no big league team in Mexico City, honestly.
Yes. And we should probably talk about that series a little bit more. But yeah, 11 homers in the first game combined, which I had to remind myself was not the record because 2019 happened. So I enjoyed going back and looking at the record game, which was D-backs Phillies in 2019, which included a home run from Jerod Dyson. So imagine if you had taken the 2019 baseballs and put them in Mexico City. We would have had 21 home runs. But Sunday's game, a little bit more normal. But that there was some goofy stuff in those games for sure.
It's what, like 40% higher elevation than Coors or something outrageous?
It's way beyond. It kind of makes me a little worried that that's what it took to have Soto, Bogarts, Tatis, and Machado all homer in the same game. Hopefully that's not the last time we'll see it, but it's fine. Padres vibes are also good. Who else won their series?
All right. 3-1ers, Rays over the White Sox, who salvage the Sunday game with an absurd comeback for the ages. We'll get to that. Orioles 3-1 over the Tigers. We probably need to talk about Orioles reliever Yennier Cano at some point here soon. Oh, Twins 3-1 over the Royals in what I would say the forgettable series of the weekend. And then the Rangers taking 3 from the Yankees at Globe Death Field in Texas. We will do a special episode of Yankenfreude a little bit later where we get to revel in the misery of Yankees fans. We are professional baseball journalists. And then the 2-1 series, the Blue Jays over the Mariners. Mariners salvaging the Sunday game with a great comeback of their own, losing the Saturday game on a Dalton Varsho walk-off. The Reds over the A's. The A's walk it off on Sunday. The Red Sox over the Guardians. I watched 0 of that one. The Guardians are in town in New York. I will see them today. The Diamondbacks over the Rockies. This one's somewhat notable because the Rockies had 35,000 people at their game on Saturday afternoon when they got waxed 11-4. And that is baseball in Denver. Shouts out to that fan base. Shouts out to that city packing that ballpark, drinking beer in the nice weather without a care in the world for their purple and black team that just absolutely kind of stinks. Just a really interesting example of, maybe you don't need to invest in the team to make money as an organization. Maybe just build a nice beer garden and people will show up. Phillies over the Astros in the World Series rematch, taking game 7 and game 8 of the World Series before dropping game 9 on Sunday. The Brewers over the Angels and the Pirates over the Nats 2-1. Shouts out to Drew Maggi, who has been deployed back down to Altoona. The run is over, everybody.
Yeah, it was a good run, though. He got his hit, he got his RBI, he got his multiple games played. He's not just going to go down 0-for-1 with a strikeout like we thought he might. And now he will return to the Eastern League, where he will take that big league experience and teach the youths about what being a big leaguer is all about, if he can find time in between all of his podcast appearances.
The Maggi,
we love it.
The Maggi has run dry, Jordan. There is no Maggi left in Mudville. And then the Mets Braves played 5 innings of baseball this weekend. A rain shortened W for the Braves on Friday. Max Fried was great. I was at that game. And then they're going to play 2 today as well to finish that series.
Allegedly. So we'll see if they can get those games in. That was disappointing, right? I know we were looking forward to that series as one of the marquee matchups of the weekend, but we did not get it. Before we get to the White Sox, because I know it's fresh in your mind, let's talk about the Sunday Night Baseball game. I know you watched a good chunk of this one. You know, Philly's taking the first two down in Houston, but this one was pretty standard. Again, the Astros, there are some issues with the Astros for sure. But one of the issues is not the, I mean, I guess the bullpen in this game, they did ultimately allow a run finally. You know, they had that run of like a week straight without allowing a run out of the bullpen. A little bit shakier recently. I know Urquidy maybe a little bit injured now, but the Astros do pull away in this one. What were your takeaways from the Sunday Night Baseball game? I know we got some good Schwarber mic'd up moments as well.
Oh, yeah. Miking up Schwarber was great because he's not your typical mic'd up guy. Like, he's not a high-energy individual necessarily, but he's so funny and so sharp and so personable. I'm all in on Schwarb. Other takeaways. Bailey Falter, with all due respect, that man can't be, like, he is just so mid, man.
I can't believe he got as deep into the game as he did. Remember, the Astros' first 3 batters of the game reached, and then Jose Abreu, which that's a conversation we're probably going to have at some point here, because Jose Abreu has been just abysmal. He grounds into a double play, kind of gets him out of that inning. It seemed like it was going to be another Bailey Falter, doesn't make it out of the first, but instead he does manage to pitch into the fifth, but still they chipped away at him, and then the Phillies offense just not quite getting it done, only 5 hits in this one. So it was a little bit quieter.
Bailey Falter moving to 0-5 in the year. Not great, Bob.
I mean, Matt Strom's been unbelievable. So it's almost kind of balanced out, and I don't really know what the plan is with Strom moving forward. Are we keeping him in the rotation? Are we keeping, like, it seems kind of strange.
Oh, I would imagine that whenever Ranger Suarez gets back, I believe he just had a rehab start in AA Reading. Mm-hmm. I think the plan will be for him to move into the rotation and to bump Falter, and he'll be an up-down guy or a long guy out of the pen, because Strom's been so much better than Falter in, you know, the early going so far. You can't justify bumping Strom and keeping Falter. All right, let's move on to the White Sox. The White Sox. How about them, Jordan? They had a weekend. Oh, boy. It's like, you know, you have a friend who is like maybe at a bachelorette party over the weekend, and their Instagram story is just like 85 photos. And it's like, wow, they had a weekend. That's how I feel about the White Sox.
So last we spoke on Friday, they were coming off of an embarrassing 9-run loss in the series opener at home against the Rays, the mighty Rays, the last team you would want to see come into town if you were in the midst of an epically catastrophic skid. Then that night on Friday, they managed to lose the game again late with a go-ahead home run by Isak Paredes in the top of the ninth. So they lose that one 3-2. Then on Saturday, it's like, oh God, how do we bounce back from that? Well, you just get absolutely blown out. Once again, they have a situation where Lance Lynn has a no-hitter going into the seventh, and they still managed to lose by 9. That was some more impressive performance art from the White Sox. And we go to Sunday. And on Sunday, I was actually watching a good chunk of this game, at least the first half before I had to drive home. And it was a close game. And, you know, Clevinger, not that anyone's rooting for him, he's like pitching okay. And then suddenly, boom, back-to-back home runs from Taylor Walls and Luke Rayleigh. Rays take the lead. And at this point, I'm like, oh God, like I turned it off, got in the car, I was driving. Then as I'm driving, I'm getting texts. I knew at this point they were down by one. The White Sox are down by one. But as I'm driving, I'm getting texts like, oh my God, the White Sox. Oh my God, the White Sox. And that's as they are allowing more runs through more embarrassing defense. I mean, the defense in this weekend was unbelievable. I made this point. I don't know if it was on the pod or not. They have more DHs than the Phillies do.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really, you know, they got Gavin Sheets out there. They got Jake Berger at third, and God bless him. He's been, you know, obviously raking. And of course, Eloy, and, you know, they have Andrew Vaughn, who they finally got out of the outfield just to put Sheets out there. Like, it is ugly, ugly, ugly defense. And so apparently all the texts were, oh my God, the White Sox are just imploding again. And yet then in the bottom of the ninth, it almost felt like the baseball gods stepped in. And we're like, we can't.
Enough. This is Dianu.
Yeah, Dianu. This is not a sustainable path forward for anybody involved. Here are seven runs against the Rays. Andrew Vaughn walk-off home run. And as Andrew Vaughn said after the game, you know, guys, we won a baseball game. Yeah, you did. You did it, Andrew Vaughn. Congrats to you.
I've never felt worse about a team after a win in which they scored seven in the bottom of the ninth. This game does not change how I feel about the White Sox. It does not change anything about this team. Everything that was wrong about this team, they showed it in full force on Saturday in the win. They just happened to explode at the right time for a heap of runs, which could happen at any moment. It is just, I'm happy they got a W. We need a lot more of this. Need a lot more games like this because the path forward is rocky and fraught with terrors.
Yeah. And now they have the Twins coming to town this week for three games, which, you know, the Twins feeling good after their weekend. And that is not a team you necessarily want to deal with because I was thinking like, oh my God, they have to win this game because I'm not feeling great about them against Minnesota. And then they're coming to Cincinnati this weekend. And I was like, am I about to go into a White Sox clubhouse on Friday with them on an L14?
Hey, Lucas. Good to see you, man. How's everything going? Lucas,
how are you, man?
Because like when we see players that we know, everything good? Everything all right? It's been going good? Like you can't say that. Hey, yeah.
At the same time, to your point, unless they go and, you know, sweep the Twins this week, which would be hilarious. I'm not feeling any better. I'm not feeling any better about this team. I know they have some guys coming back from injury. It sounds like Tim Anderson's going to be back, so that's great. But not only are they just in a giant hole in the standings, like it's just there's clearly still serious problems with this team and very, very deep rooted.
So as a human being, as a singular person, you can take a day off from work, whether it's like administrative leave or a sick day or vacation day. You could just opt out and take some time on yourself and recuperate and recover and get back to what you need to be. The White Sox can't do that as an organization. What the White Sox really need is like a week off. Like just no games, like go on vacation, recuperate and come back. But they can't do that because that's not how baseball works.
That was my exact thought on Saturday. After the Saturday disaster where they have the no-hitter and they still lose by nine, I had that exact thought of like, this is the beauty and insanity of this sport that we cover is that you just got to go back out there. It's like, I think about this often with like late night walk-offs, like devastating, even individual games, forget losing streaks, right? But like a complete heartbreaking loss that, you know, happens in a night game and you got a day game tomorrow. And I always think like, they got to just go out there and play again tomorrow. And that's the beauty of it because you get to play again tomorrow, right? That's the thing. It's like we have an opportunity to put it behind us tomorrow. And that is thankfully for everyone involved what the White Sox did on Sunday. But it also works the way you're describing it where I'm just like, I can't believe they have to try this again tomorrow. Like this is so rough to watch, but I'm glad it's over because eventually losing streaks, it's kind of like extra innings where at first it's like, oh, okay. And then you're like, what? And then you're like, oh, no. Oh, God. This is really, really difficult to watch. And now that's what we got to. And I'm glad it's over.
The White Sox losing streak felt like Shiva, where it was like, you got to go back out there and you got to face this again. And eventually the pain will subside. The mourning will cease. It will lessen. This will better you. Okay. Yeah. You need to go face it. Yeah. However, I if I'm MLB, I'm like, I think it's best for everybody if the White Sox just take a week. Just take a week.
It would totally torpedo the schedule, but yeah. The Twins are like, because this is the opposite. The Twins are like, no. We want to play. We want to play the White Sox. Like, you don't take them away from us. Like, we really would like to play them.
Last thing on the White Sox. This is not a good team, but this is not this team is not this bad. And
no.
This is an example, more than any in recent memory, of vibes just torpedoing a situation.
Yeah.
Where the quality of the players in the field didn't really matter because everyone was in such a mental funk that they were doing dumb shit like the entire weekend.
Yep. Yep. I mean, we honestly had this with the Angels last year with their losing streak, right? That roster was not that bad. Wasn't that good either, but you could say the same thing about the White Sox. And yet you lose a billion games in a row. That's what happens. On this morning of May 1st, the White Sox playoff odds at FanGraphs are 4%, which honestly seems kind of generous, but you know, we can cling on to that. So congrats to the Southsiders. We wanted to give you some love after we spent 15 minutes dunking on you on Friday.
Anything else from these games, Jordan, before we take a break and come back and talk about Bryce Harper?
No, it was good. I'm pretty amped about the Marlins. I think they're fascinating. The three one-run wins were really, really something. They're now 10-0 in one-run games, which is, I think, the best start for any team since the 2004 Dodgers. So they're just a really interesting team, and I'm you know, Skip Schumacher, let's make it happen. Meanwhile, you know, the Cardinals are maybe Skip Schumacher was the secret. You know, the bench coach in St. Louis last year, now he's in Miami, just winning all these close games. Their bullpen looks pretty good. It's a fun team.
Maybe Skip was the glue that stirred the drink.
I think that's exactly what it was. All right, let's take a break. We'll be back talking some important injuries, some guys coming back, some guys going away, and everything in between.
Hey, everybody. I'm James Hinchcliffe.
And I'm Alexander Rossi. And we're the hosts of Off Track with Hinch and Rossi.
The racing season is in full swing, and we're breaking down all the exciting action on and off the track from the world of IndyCar, NASCAR, Formula One, and more.
And by more, we mean that sometimes we just talk about whatever the hell we want, like time travel, Canadian ships, or the many reasons not to go to Death Valley. Either way, join us. Every week, we'll be here having fun.
Fun's a relative term, but that's not the point. Download Off Track with Hinch and Rossi on Apple, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are back here on Baseball Barbacast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman, Bryce Harper. He's not hosting this show with us, nor is he on it, but he is back, and so it felt relevant. Here he is, Jordan. I think the ball player of our generation. Mike Trout is better. There are other players with higher WAR and more home runs, but I firmly believe that no ball player has defined our generation of baseball fandom in the way that Bryce Aaron Harper has.
And I agree.
He is back, reportedly, this week at some point. He got Tommy John surgery on November 23rd, 2022, after playing all of last year with a torn UCL that prohibited him from throwing a baseball, and he still did all the things he did in October. He underwent surgery. He missed the first month of the year, and he will be back at some point this week. Holy Jeebus.
Yeah, this is amazing. And to be clear, as we were recording this on Monday, the latest news, the Athletic's Matt Gelb, just tremendous reporting throughout this whole situation and Harper's attempts to come back faster than basically we've ever seen almost anybody return. Of course, we expected him to be back faster than a pitcher would be, but this is still outrageous. One comp that has, of course, been made was Shohei Ohtani. Now, he got TJ in October, the beginning of October 2018, and he came back on May 7th, 2019. It was the first time he hit. So that is about almost 2 months difference, right? Because you said it's the end of November he got his
November 23rd, I believe.
Right. So it is possible he will be slotting in at of course, DH for all the talk about him learning first base. But I'm curious for you, because you were in Philadelphia. You talked to Bryce Harper. You saw Bryce Harper, and you saw him move around and exist. And are you, I guess this is a good place to start, even though I think I know the answer. Are you surprised by this really at all?
I'm not surprised by anything he does at this point. He is a singular freak, a force. He is, I really wish I had better words to describe it. He is inevitable, I think, is what he is. And that is how he has approached this return. And speaking to Bryce Harper, it was the first time I have ever talked or interviewed Bryce Harper. You just got a sense that, like, this surgery, this major reconstructive elbow surgery, was a minor inconvenience for him. He was like, yeah, like, you know, it was a couple of weeks in bed and that was fine. Like, and I got Tommy John surgery and it, like, torpedoed my life for 2 months. You know, like, I couldn't piss without, you know, my left hand. Like, you just, there are all these things you have to relearn how to do. And Bryce Harper is either one, fronting with me, or two, not actually having any issues with it. And I believe number two, because it's Bryce Harper. And he threw for the first time from 60 feet last week and is not going to play first base until around the All-Star game. He can't really throw full speed until then. But the fact that he's taking full gas batting practice and is going to be ready to hit in a big league game this week is remarkable stuff. And it is helpful, just to, this is how it was kind of explained to me, is if it was because he's a right-handed thrower and a left-handed swinger, his front arm is the one that was repaired, right? Which is better than it being his back arm. Because the issues when you have Tommy John surgery are full flexion and full extension, right? Having the range at either of those ends is where you kind of lose the mobility. And the most dangerous is the full extension. And if you're a, if you like mimic a swing, your back elbow starts at full flexion, like you're making a, you know, like you're showing off your muscles. And then when you swing through, you get to full extension with that back arm. So he's, a back arm would be going through the entire motion and might take him longer to do this. Whereas his front arm, even though he's obviously using it throughout the swing, it's not the same level of strain where his elbow is bending the whole way through. And this was part of the reason, I think, why Ohtani was able to come back relatively quick, because he throws righty and hits lefty. So that's just another aspect of it that has allowed Harper to return at the pace that he did.
That's really interesting, because I intuitively, I would have expected the opposite, because to me, your lead arm is, you know, that's guiding the bat. That's, you know, that's, again, we're not going to get into hitting mechanics here, but it feels like that is where you are supplying the power. No. But I guess not.
No,
it looks like it. Yeah.
I mean, we could talk about hitting Twitter forever, but like I firmly believe that top hand, that your back arm is more important in terms of staying tight to your body and in terms of generating the power from your back shoulder. Is like in your back hip is where a lot of the power comes from in your swing. Whereas the top hand, or sorry, the bottom hand, like the front arm, is really just leading the way.
Sure.
And so there's less like strain and rotation as you come.
Yeah, the less strain, that part makes sense. I think you explained that well, even on an audio podcast. But I do think also with Harper, he doesn't have a one-hand finish. So that's another thing when you think about guys like Tatis. This was a big issue with Tatis. And I know that was a different injury because it was, you know, shoulder. But his issue was he was flying open and his left shoulder was being like pulled in the other direction because of how hard he was swinging and his left shoulder was opening so fast. And that's why part of why he had to change his swing to a two-handed finish. Harper's always had a two-handed finish, so I have to imagine that also probably helps. But I think you explained that well. Now, all the little hitting mechanics, all the why is he... Okay, let's talk about this as it relates to the Phillies. Because the Phillies at this point are 15 and 14. They are pretty good. They are nowhere near as good as the Braves. How does Bryce Harper coming back change the way you think about the Phillies? Obviously, it's like, great, you have Bryce Harper. We don't know. I mean, it's easy to assume that Bryce Harper is just going to pick it right up after no spring training and no minor league rehab appearances and just be a 150 OPS plus. I hope that's what I hope to see. And will it surprise me if he does that? No. Will it surprise me if he is at least a little bit slow to start here where the Phillies are already still back? No, it also wouldn't. And so I'm curious about how this influences for someone who certainly thinks about the Phillies and writes about the Phillies and talks about the Phillies all the time. Does this change how you feel about where they are headed in this season in a really dramatic way compared to if he had come back in July?
Yeah, it's a huge deal. I mean, it's a huge deal because he could be the best hitter in the world for any given 3 weeks. Like he can just win you individual games over a long period of time in a way that few other players can. Now, the lineup is not the problem here with this team as currently constructed. Getting range, like the Galaxy brain take is that Ranger Suarez's return is more important to the Phillies, which is wrong because Bryce Harper's, we saw what he did in October, right? He can do that over any individual stretch of time. And so I think it does not elevate the Phillies to where the Braves are. I think Harper coming back and being one of the best hitters in the world helps close the gap to where they are and compared to the Mets, because like, who is Harper replacing? Like who's at bats is he taking away? And the answer is Cody Clemens. Okay. No shade to Cody Clemens, but that's probably who goes down, or Jake Cave, or Josh
Jake
Harrison.
Cave is the one that stands out to me. Right. He's someone that has played a lot. And I know Pache just went down. He's hurt too. And I know that doesn't sound like that big of a deal, but he seemed to be figuring something out in the outfield. But it does seem like, right, we'll have Schwarber just back in the outfield all the time now instead of DHing.
And that's the thing, right? The gap between Bryce and Jake Cave is enormous. It's enormous. Whereas like the gap between Ranger Suarez and Bailey Falter is big, but it's not a canyon. Bryce Harper is Bryce Harper. Okay. And I am so excited to see him back. So what's going to happen, just, and then we can finish this conversation. The guy who did his surgery is Neil Eletroch, who's one of the, like kind of the new James Andrews for more or less. Like Andrews is just kind of aged out a little bit from doing surgeries as often as he used to. And Eletroch is based out of LA. The Phillies are in LA right now. He's going to go see Eletroch in person. Eletroch will presumably clear him today, and then he will play tomorrow, is the most likely scenario. And then the first home game will be on Friday, and I will be in attendance to see the magic with my own two eyes.
Yes. So, again, at this point, you know, maybe they push it. He's clearly going to be back soon. Maybe he doesn't play Tuesday, but he's clearly coming back soon. And that changes the complexion of the Phillies season. They are still in a bit of a hole. That's not just because Bryce Harper's been out. As you mentioned, there are other problems with this roster, clearly. But this is a huge deal, and I'm just excited. Right? I'm just excited to watch him again, because that's the thing. Like when we all throughout October was like, this is amazing, this is amazing, this is amazing. Also, we're not going to get to watch him until July next year, and that sucks. Like that was my mindset for all of October. And now here we are on May 1st, and he's like, guys, I'm back. Don't worry about it. We're chilling.
Just to give a sense very quickly for people who maybe don't know, when pitchers get Tommy John surgery, the recovery timeline there is between 12 and 16 months, right? And that fluctuation, that four-month difference, is just how well does your arm take to the surgery and how quickly do you regain full strength and full mobility? And it just depends. Everyone's body is different. For a hitter, it's obviously less of a strain because you are not, your job is not to throw baseballs full speed 100 times a day. Okay, and so it's quicker, but there's still getting major surgery on a body part. There's a level of discomfort and like unease and lack of trust you have in your ligaments as you return. And I can say from experience as someone who did get Tommy John surgery that I did not fully trust my elbow for like a year and a half, right? And I'm not a professional athlete, I understand that. But the fact that Bryce Harper is out here taking full gas swings at 5 months is just ludicrous stuff. 4 months.
Yeah. And it'll related is it will be interesting to see how, not that it's the most important thing, but I am curious if he is going to play first base this year, right? It's possible that by the time he's ready to throw it all in a baseball game, he's ready to just play the outfield. So we'll see about that.
Bryce Harper will play a lot of first base this year once he can throw 100%. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So we'll see when that happens. Of course, that's not the most important thing, but it will be something to monitor, because what that does is that just impacts the whole Phillies kind of ecosystem in terms of the lineup and the defensive alignment. So that will matter. But for now, he will be back in the lineup, and that is what matters. Now, that is someone who is returning incredible from elbow trouble. Someone who is not returning from elbow trouble, at least for an undetermined amount of time, as we have heard before, is Jacob DeGrom.
What?
Jacob DeGrom.
No.
After some spring training side soreness, two starts ago, we had wrist soreness, which, I'm sorry, Jake, I've literally never heard of that before. Like, have you heard of wrist soreness for a pitcher? Like, that's forearm. That's not Like, I'm not saying he's making it up, but like, to me, like, the when you hear people talk about, oh, I felt it here, it was in my wrist and then up to my forearm, like, that's the same thing, right? Like, when I heard wrist soreness, I wasn't like, oh, good, it's not the elbow. That was not my takeaway 2 weeks ago.
I mean, maybe he just did a push-up weird. I don't know, man. But okay, so wrist soreness, and then what happened yesterday?
Well, so then over the weekend, of course, he's on Friday, he's pitching against the Yankees, and as always, he looks amazing. That's the whole thing. He's never doesn't look amazing. He's throwing 100 the whole game, and then he throws a 97 mile an hour fastball for a ball, followed by an 89 mile an hour slider, which Willie Calhoun hit to left field for a single. And while in normal people, you'd be like, wow, 97 and an 89 mile an hour slider. But like, again, if you compared it to the rest of the start, you'd be like, huh, that's a little bit down. He tells the trainer to come out. You see Mike Maddux say forearm. He walks off. And now they put him on the IL with elbow inflammation. This sucks, first and foremost, because all we all want to do is just watch Jacob DeGrom, right? We all know the risks in hit. Like, this has been the whole thing now for multiple seasons. And it's not about making light of it, but it is a reality that, like, to pretend like this isn't part of what you're signing up for is just, you know, naive. At the same time, like, he's one of the best pitchers we've ever seen. He's one of the best pitchers of all time. He, in between all of these ailments, has continued to look like the best pitcher of all time. It's not like a situation where, oh God, he's not what he was. Like, nope. Every time he goes out there, he looks the same. That has been true between all of these different injuries, whether it's in spring, whether it's in the middle of the summer, whether it's the beginning of the season, like, that has just been true the whole time. And that is what is so maddening, because sometimes, you know, situations like Strasburg, I hate to bring that name up here, but like, as we've seen him battle injuries, every time he's come back, it's like, oh my God, this is just not even the same person. That's not okay, the case but with DeGrom.
Here's the thing with DeGrom. Do you think that part of why he always looks as good as he looks is because he's never pitching through anything? Like, whenever we see DeGrom on a mound, he is 100% of himself. And that is why he is always throwing 100 miles an hour. Whereas there are situations with other pitchers where maybe they're not at their best, but they're out there pitching, throwing less hard with less snap and fighting through, you know, below average stuff on that given day. Whereas DeGrom does not do that. Now, I'm not trying to make an argument here that DeGrom is like soft or he's not toughing it out or whatever. He was clearly born with a very bizarre, unique body that allows him to accomplish these incredible things, but also breaks down all the time because he's doing this outrageous motion all the time on a pitcher's mound, right? Those two things are the same. But there is, and I'll speak freely here, like, there is an understanding within the game that, like, players look at him a little bit differently than they do at, like, a Scherzer or a Verlander. Ball players respect guys who post, guys who show up, and guys who play. That is such a big thing within baseball. And DeGrom does not do that. He does not do that. And whether or not that is his own fault is not the point. The fact of the matter is that he has this reputation, warranted reputation, for not being a reliable pitcher. And he is not a reliable pitcher. He is a spectacular pitcher. He's the best pitcher in the world when he's on a mound. But it is part of this deal with the devil that you make anytime you want to go watch him.
And again, let's not act like people say when the Rangers give him all this money, they're like, don't they know that he's not? Like, no, it's just a calculated risk. It's just a decision that for them, it is worth to roll the dice for the innings that they are going to get. Because there's also a version of the season, a not very likely one, where he does throw 180 innings. Like, that is a version of the season. It's just not, you're just not going to roll that side of the dice very often. But the Rangers saw it as, this is worth it. Because to have the opportunity to have someone like this, which, by the way, the next day, Nathan Eovaldi throws a complete game shutout. That's another guy who's had a million arm injuries and also has fluctuated in terms of how often he's been able to stay on the field. And when he's injured, he does look like shit. And then he can somehow bounce back and look amazing and throw a complete game shutout, right? There's versions of this. There's reasons you do take these risks because the talent is so great. But DeGrom, obviously the risk is higher than almost any other pitcher we have at this stage who is also at least still capable of looking as good as he does. So it sucks. And injury discourse about this is challenging because, right, you don't want to say anything about the player's drive or the player's willingness. Like, injuries are injuries. These players, you extend this to all sports. I know we're getting all kinds of horribly stupid discourse about this in the NBA with Kawhi Leonard, where it's like, okay, yeah, we can get mad about the fact that he's not out there because we want to watch him. It's true. It's also a fact that he's also often not out there, right? And that's kind of where we're at with DeGrom. Whose fault is it? Doesn't matter. It's just a matter of what is happening and what we are seeing over and over and over again. And that is worth acknowledging and recognizing that that is part of this. It sucks. It's unfortunate. It doesn't make me like him any less, but it is not something that we can be surprised by. And I think that there's a balance there that we can try to strike, even though talking about injuries, I think, is one of the least fun parts of sports, of course.
Yeah, like, can we joke about this? Like, I think we can make light jokes about this, just lightly, because it's not as if, like, he's just got $185 million. Like, he's going to be okay. Like, I know he's bummed, and I don't want to joke about people getting hurt. But, like, when DeGrom goes on the IL again, and I, like, see it on my phone, I'm like, oh, it's the opposite of Cal Ripken. Like, that right. Little quips, like, that, like, I'm not trying to be mean to the guy, but we've reached a point here where it's like...
No, I know, and it sucks. Like, to me, again, like, still my main takeaway is just, like, it is unfortunate, and that is why, you know, as Andy McCullough wrote so well, he wrote about this a couple days ago, like, you... To tune into DeGrom is this feeling of, I need to watch this because I don't know when I'm going to watch it again. And that is weird. He's almost singular in that sense. But I think that that's where we're at. And I hope it's not serious. But like we just said, I have no reason to trust that he's going to be back next week and around for another 150 innings. Like, it's just, there's, why would I believe that? That's just not what is being told to me by the by his track record at this point. So
it's like going to see a performer live who, like, has a very sporadic touring schedule. It's like, oh, well, I got to see Frank Ocean now. It could be 3 years
I better
before
go.
He performs again.
He's still listed as the starter. Like, I should go show up before he gets scratched. Even then, hey, let's say he only throws 4 innings. It'll be the best 4 innings you've seen all season.
Yeah, that's not what happened with Frank Ocean at Coachella. But we'll move on. It is time for the first episode of Yankenfreude check-in. For those of you who do not know, Schadenfreude is a German term defined as the pleasure derived by someone from someone else's misfortune. And Yankenfreude is that exact concept, except with the Yankees. Mm. It is no secret that the Yankees are the most popular team in baseball. They are also the most important team in baseball. They drive the most eyeballs and the most clicks. They are the most popular, and that is a fact. But if you did not grow up a Yankees fan, there is a part of your soul that derives at least a little bit of pleasure and joy whenever the Yankees are scuffling, because it is funny. Because the Yankees carry themselves with a holier-than-thou approach, but if they're not holier-than-thou, it all just looks a little bit silly. And the Yankees are not doing so hot, Jordan.
No. 15-14 is the same record as the Phillies. It's the same record as the Red Sox, their rivals. It's the same record as the Angels, who are very weird. It's the same record as the Padres. Okay, well, why aren't we freaking out about them? Well, because all those teams are not the Yankees. And the Yankees are the team that is supposed to always be good. They're not supposed to be in last place, 8 games back of Tampa Bay on May 1st. But here they are. And the reason we are talking about them after talking about Bryce and talking about DeGrom is because injuries are once again a huge part of this equation. Unfortunately, that includes our friend and recent podcast guest, Carlos Rodon, who is still yet to return. That, of course, includes Luis Severino. That includes Frankie Montas. Those guys are out. But most recently, it includes Giancarlo Stanton, who hit the IL with a strained hamstring. Harrison Bader is still out. Josh Donaldson is still out. And now Aaron Judge, which... By the time you're listening to this, we might have more clarification about Aaron Judge's timeline, but he has some sort of hip issue that might be keeping him out for a while as well. And now we are left with a lineup that is not really that impressive. Now, this was true for much of last season as Aaron Judge was hitting home runs every day. But now, without Stanton and Judge, now we're in a situation where I'm truly looking at this lineup and saying, this is like the eighth best lineup in the American League. Like, honestly, right? Like, without Judge, like, how low can you go here? I mean, it is just not a particularly impressive group. So where are you at on this? Obviously, you will be at Yankee Stadium today, so you'll probably get this news. What's your sense here? What's your panic level? Because to me, it's more, I'm less worried about the team playing as well as a whole as the fact that just, like, the rest of this division is fucking awesome. And so you really do not have time to have any amount of issues like this if you have any hope of catching the Rays, let alone the Orioles, let alone the Blue Jays.
So I go back and forth, and I go back and forth because this exact same thing happened last year where their lineup looked pretty poo-poo and IKF was terrible and Donaldson was playing all the time, right? And like LeMahieu was out for a while and like they just ended up, Gallo was awful, right? And they won 99 games. They won 99 games last year. Now, what's different this go around, right? What's different this go around is Judge is not going to do what he did last year again. It's impossible. There's no way, right? You cannot do that again. And that the rest of the division is better. Those are the two things, right? Are those two differences enough to really sink this team? No, not yet. I'm actually freaking out less about the Yankees than maybe other people. Rizzo looks great. Gleyber Torres has been fine. Judge has been like not as good as last year, but he's still one of the best hitters in the world. Volpe seems to like be figuring a bunch of things out right now at the plate. Now, the second level of players, there's no depth here. And that is an unforgivable, embarrassing thing for a team with the resources that the Yankees have. Their fifth most valuable player by WAR is Ian Hamilton out of the bullpen. Okay, I think a lot of people listening have never heard that name before. That soft underbelly of like Trevino, who's been meh. Franchi, friend of the show, was terrible, got sent down. Willie Calhoun, friend of the show, has been bad. Maybe Aaron Hicks, terrible. IKF, bad. Peraza, not good. Higashioka, bad. Now they're calling up Jake Bowers. Like
Oswaldo
Cabrera really does not look good. Like, there needed to be more of a safety net here than there is. And like, I think some of these guys will put it together. I do, but not all of them. Yeah. And in previous years, like, this team had been saved by the random Michael Tauchman, Matt Carpenter hot stretch. Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen every year, you know?
Yeah. I mean, rewind a year. So I agree with most of your points. I think this team, there's versions of this lineup, pitching staff, their guys will get healthier and they will come back. But as I mentioned, I mean, they're 8 games back. A year ago, they were only a game and a half back, but I believe they were in the midst of a 10-game winning streak. You know, by June 1st, they were 5.5 up. By July 1st, they were 14 up in the division. And so, as I just said, there's just no time. Like, even if these guys turn it around, you would need collapses from three different teams to get back in the division mix, which is why, to me, like, the division, I mean, 8 games, it's only May 1st. Is that impossible? No. I mean, I'm really skeptical that hoping. I don't know. I mean, I'd be curious what their odds are now for winning the division. Now it says the Yankees get 12% this morning on Fangraphs for winning the division still, which seems about right. But like, that's the part that I'm more concerned about, is just where they are at now in the standings. Because I'm with you that a lot of these players can bounce back, but we'll see. If Judge is out for a month, This lineup is just simply not very good. It is that simple. The pitching, there's still parts of this pitching staff that are incredibly impressive. And that includes that bullpen with random guys like Ian Hamilton, like Jimmy Cordero, who's been pretty good, right? Michael King's back. He's been fantastic. Like, there are, obviously, Gerrit Cole might win the Cy Young this year. Like, there are things that are going pretty well. But that, with Nestor not looking great, Herman obviously stinks. Clark Schmidt has not been very good. We're still getting Johnny Brito starts. This is a pretty average team right now, and they just don't have time to be average. So that would be my concern. Could they still make the postseason? Absolutely. They're just in the wrong division to be having these kind of slow starts. So that's where I'm at with the Yankees.
The other thing about this team I was going to say, yeah, is this is the first time in a long time, though, where I can envision a Yankees team finishing under 500. I can see this team doing that. Now, I think they'll make a wild card and get into the playoffs. That's like where I'd push my chips right now. But you could also envision a scenario where they win 79 games.
Yes. Oof. And For those unfamiliar, this is the team with the most winning seasons in a row. Their last under 500 year was 1992 when they went 76-86. The closest they've come to 500 since then is when they won 84 games in 2016 and 2014, I should say. But yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. It's definitely on the table here. And we're going to take a quick break now. And the Yankees actually a good transition there to another team that is basically never bad. But right now, they are very, very, very bad. So we're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back and talk about the Cardinals of St. Louis.
And we're back here on Baseball Barbacast, Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman, and the scuffling St. Louis Cardinals. Hey, look over there. That's a bad baseball team right now.
10-19, I believe it is their worst start in like half a century or something. We just talked about the Yankees, the team with the longest streak of winning seasons. The Cardinals, the second longest streak of winning seasons. Their last season under 500 was, do you remember, Jake?
2006.
Oh, so... Oh, you mean when they won the World Series? No, that was not a losing season.
They were pretty close. They were pretty close. Didn't they win like 84 games?
Yeah, they won 83. They won 83 and won the World Series.
Okay.
2007 was their so you almost got it. In 2007, they won 78 games. Since then, they've been a winning team every year. They've been in the postseason a boatload of times. They've, of course, won a World Series since then. They've been to a World Series since then. They've made the postseason each of the last 4 years. And now they are bad. Jake, they just got swept by the Dodgers in Dodger Stadium. That in and of itself, no huge shame in that, right?
That's happened to every baseball podcast in the world.
Absolutely, right? Who among us? But when the rest of the start of your season has gone poorly, it now puts you at 10-19 and in last place in the division that you've won a million freaking times over the last 20 years. And now we're just kind of like, okay, is this just straight up not a postseason team? If you're not worried about the Yankees and their chances to make the postseason, where are you at with the Cardinals?
Okay, so let's talk about what's gone well quickly so we cannot worry about that. Paul Goldschmidt, holy shit.
What a guy. What a guy.
What a guy.
Just hitting 300, 400, 500 again. Doesn't matter what the hell's going on around him. Just one of the best players in the world.
Wilson Contreras, pretty solid. Not great, but pretty solid.
Horrible start.
Yes.
Heated up the last 2 weeks. Like he was on the fact that he's gotten his OPS up to 762 should tell you how good he's been in the last couple weeks.
Nolan Gorman, real hitter. He looks legit. Also, definitely a horrible defender. Anywhere you put him, he has been DHing every day, but he has been raking for the Cardinals. Tommy Edman, pretty solid. That's pretty much it in the lineup. On the pitching side of things, Jordan Montgomery's been all right. Jack Flaherty has shown some really good things and also some really horrible things. And then, you know, Giovanni Gallegos is always really good. And that's basically it. What's gone poorly? Okay, so Nolan Arenado has been horrible.
Just inexplicably awful. Poop. I mean, him and Machado have both had really, really slow starts. Nolan Arenado could have used the trip to Mexico City. Let's just leave it there, right? A lot of discussion. Oh, goes to St. Louis. There's no way his numbers are going to be as good in St. Louis as in Colorado. He's like, actually, they're going to be better. So screw you. His OPS plus career high last year, career season, right? You could not have felt better about Nolan Arenado coming into this year. And instead, he's been downright bad. He has a 600 OPS. This has been one of the most reliable hitters in baseball for the last decade. He has been bad, bad hitter.
The Cardinals outfield jambalaya of mediocrity. Okay. Part of the reason that Jordan Walker was sent down is because they had five guys they wanted to start at any given time, and because Nolan Gorman is DHing, they couldn't do that. That's Alec Burleson, Dylan Carlson, Jordan Walker, Tyler O'Neill, and Lars Nootbaar. They sent Walker down, so now they have Burleson, Carlson, O'Neill, and Nootbaar. And Nootbaar is the only one who's been an above-average hitter. Carlson, I am worried about. Burleson is a very flawed player who might be able to hit. I think he needs to go on a different team and just DH and like crush it for the A's or something. They're not just going to give him away, but that I think that's just how this will pan out. And then Jordan Walker is now in AAA again. And so there hasn't been enough consistency in the lineup. But the real issue here is the rotation. Because the pitching staff, the bottom half of it, Miles Michaelis, Jake Woodford, and Steven Matz, I mean, have been three automatic losses so far this year.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's which we knew. Like, it's not like this. Well, Miles Michaels was an all-star last year, so even if you saw some regression, you wouldn't expect him to have allowed 45 hits in 31 innings. What's weird to me is that we knew they built this rotation around putting the ball in play and playing great defense. I don't know how their defensive metrics have been specifically, but like, I'm seeing a lot of hits, even if they're not all home runs. Like, balls are getting in play and they're not being converted into outs to the same degree. And then the bullpen, even though they have some guys that throw hard, it is just not a strong group. And, you know, you could see some regression from Helsley, and that's come with some untimely home runs from him. Hicks was awesome yesterday or on Saturday, but has looked horrible in the six or seven starts before then. So we knew the pitching staff was going to be weak. I thought through the first couple of weeks, like, oh, it's not going to matter. This is one of the best lineups in the league. And now that the lineup has cooled off, it's just not a very good team. And it's kind of wild to watch. They've lost a lot of close games. They've lost a lot of blowouts where their pitching is just completely non-competitive. And I'm not really sure what the move is here, because all these pitchers are veteran. Like, they're not going to go away from a Mats, a Montgomery. Montgomery's been good, but Mats and Michaelis, like, they just pay these guys. You can't really do anything with them. And they have some pitchers, like Matthew Liberatore should be coming up. Like, he's been good. Like, he's the one I'd call up, but I don't really know what the fix is.
They have a guy in AAA who I think pitched yesterday. He threw like five innings, allowed four runs. Hotshot coming up from the minors named, I think, Adam Wainwright. He should be able to steady the ship.
I hope so. I mean, I know he was amazing last year, right? But it's like, I love Waino. Unbelievable career. This is the part where I say all these nice things and then I say that he's going to suck. There's a version of him where he comes out and gets shelled. Like, that's also very possible. And then what? So
here's my concern with this team. The pitching is the pitching. Like, these are the people who are working for them. There are not new employees showing up really anytime soon, even if you call it Matthew Liberatore or whatever. Sure. There are going to be a lot of balls put in play. In the past, those were converted in outs. For whatever reason, that's not the case this year. Is it small sample size, or are these guys getting worse at defense? I don't know. Probably a little bit of both would be my guess. Either way, I'm not worried at all about the hitting. I think the lineup will get hot and figure it out. This run prevention group could end up being particularly brutal. Would you pick them to win the division or make the playoffs right now?
At this point?
You did at the beginning of the year.
Probably not. I mean, I if you're just looking, forget the division, because at this point, like, the Pirates, we're going to keep giving them love. We'll talk about them certainly more in the coming weeks. But it's just the Brewers look good enough where I just feel like they're not going to, they look solid enough that they're going to stay at the top for sure. Maybe the Pirates have some sort of collapse. And the Cubs look pretty solid. So even after their rough weekend in Miami. So division, I'm not feeling good about. And then, you're just competing with a lot of teams. And like, this is where, you know, the Phillies kind of finding their stride. Like, that's where it hurts those teams. And normally we haven't had to worry about it. Last year, I was the one screaming like Cardinals, 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 Cardinals. Now I'm feeling the opposite. It just has a very different feel this year. And maybe it was all Skip Schumacher. Maybe it was.
I am going to keep the faith.
Okay.
I am not totally worried quite yet. I think they get right this week at home against the Angels and the Tigers, and things look a little bit different next Monday.
Yeah. Also, but again, opposite problem of the Yankees, because you can see some coming back to the pack with the Pirates, you know, with even the Reds, who have played pretty well recently. Like, that, those teams are clearly improved from last year, but it's not like dealing with Toronto and Baltimore and Tampa and even Boston, who's pretty frisky. So I think that will help them, but it's going to get pretty crowded. Like, it's getting late for them as well. But there's so much talent especially on the offensive side, that I'm kind of with you. Like, especially when you compare those to the Yankees position players, I feel better about some of these Cardinals hitters figuring it out and getting hot compared to the bottom half of that Yankees position player group. So in that sense, I feel a little bit better. I've defended the Cardinals a lot recently, but there's a lot going wrong here. So they're going to have to figure it out soon. All right, Jake, we've come to the end of our show, and we are going to do a quick game. This is related to the Cardinals, who sit in last place on May 1st. And what we are going to do is we are going to draft all 30 baseball teams based on a very simple premise. We look at the standings here on May 1st, and each team is in a spot in their division. For example, the St. Louis Cardinals are in last place in the National League Central. That is a fact. They are in last place in the National League Central. And what we are going to do is we are going to take turns drafting teams based on how likely it is that they're in the exact standing spot that they are in their division today on May 1st at the end of the season. And the way we are going to keep score, which we will track at the end of the season, producer Chris can take notes of who we pick and whatnot, is that every spot that they move in either direction is going to be a point. And our goal is to have as few points as possible, which means that we are drafting teams based on how little they will change in their standings. So who we believe in the most.
We want stasis.
Yeah, we want stasis. We are looking at these standings and we say, I believe in that. Okay?
That's real.
That is real. I'm looking at the standings and I say, that is real. I want that. Okay? So the Cardinals, we'll see where they... If we believed that the Cardinals were the most likely team to end up in fifth place, we would take them first overall. I don't think that is going to be the case here, okay? So that is how we are going to play this game. We're gonna zoom through this pretty quickly. We have all the teams. We will each pick 15. And Jake, I will let you have the first pick.
And oh, man.
When you pick them, you say the team and you say what place they're in. We are just focused on division standings, okay? And so, for example, if the Cardinals finish in first place and I pick them, that would be 4 points, right?
Bad.
That would be bad. I would get 4 points for that. We want as few points as possible. So, Jake, go ahead and start us off with the first selection.
I'll take the A's because I'm not an idiot.
Okay, and I will take the Nationals, who, by the way, looking frisky. Love you, JoJo Gray. He looks fantastic. But I'm still absolutely taking the Nats first to finish in last place. That should be a cool 0 points. Who is your next pick?
I'll take Atlanta, the first place Atlanta Braves atop the the NL East.
Wow. Okay. I'm definitely going to go with, Kansas City. I'm going to go with Kansas City, the last place in the AL Central.
Okay. I'll take Colorado, last place in the NL West.
Okay. We have a couple ties. We go by run differential right now. So I'm going to take the Los Angeles Dodgers in first place in the NL West. Right now, I know they're tied with Arizona, but I'm going to take them in first place.
That's a good pick. Ooh, okay. This is a bit of a drop-off here. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take the Chicago Cubs in third place in the NL Central.
Very good pick. Very good pick. They were way up on my board here, so I like that pick. I am next going to go with Tampa. I think I'm going to go with Tampa. I know that the Orioles and Jays are awesome, but like I just think the Rays are awesome. And I think that they have already obviously have the best record in baseball. So I will take Tampa with my next pick, the first place Tampa Rays.
I will take the fourth place San Francisco Giants.
Oh, I should have.
In the NL West.
That was bad. All right. I will then go with the second place New York Mets.
Okay.
Is my next selection.
Great. I will take the first place Minnesota Twins.
Okay. Then I will take the second place Cleveland Guardians.
Yeah. That's a good one right there. Okay. I will now go. It gets interesting here again. I will go with.
I mean, at this point, like, I don't see that anymore that I feel super confident in.
Yeah.
So we're going to get some points here. So we're just trying to get, like, not huge swings.
Exactly. I will take the third place Los Angeles Angels.
Mm. Okay.
Because they're not dropping to fifth. They're not going to be in fifth place because the A's are there. So I'll take the third place Angels and be fine with a point.
That is a very, very good pick. I think I will take Milwaukee in second at this point. The second place Milwaukee Brewers. I would probably pick them to win the division, but that seems like a safe 1 point at the most.
Speaking of safe 1 points, I'll take the second place Houston Astros.
Okay. Yep. That's a good one. Right. Because right now we're calculating here. If the Rangers, who are, you know, on the board still at first, like they could very easily drop to third
or fourth.
Fourth, who knows? Oh, and then the Mariners, this is a tough one because it's like, how much do I really believe that they can climb much higher? I am going to next take Toronto in third, because that is, while I like Toronto and would pick them to finish in first or second, very realistic they could finish in third. So I'm going to take Toronto in third. in the AL East.
Okay, I will take Arizona in second.
Ooh, okay. Okay, nice.
Because they're not, again, they're not finishing fourth.
Right. Yeah, probably.
Like, I feel really solid about the NL West being like Colorado, San Francisco, everyone else.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think I will take I'm going to take Cincinnati fourth. Cincinnati fourth. Yeah.
Fourth place Cincinnati Reds.
This is tough now. We're looking at multi-point swings. Okay, what you got?
I will take the third place Miami Marlins.
That was my next pick. Okay. Nicely done. Nicely done. All right, I will take the San Diego Padres in third place.
Okay. I will take the fourth place Chicago White Sox. I think they get hot. No, I'm kidding. I think they don't get hot, I guess.
I will take... Okay, so you're feeling... Wow, them behind Detroit. Okay, I will take the... Because I'm worried about Detroit falling to last, right?
Yeah.
So that feels like a possible two-pointer. I'll take the Mariners... Yeah, I'll take the Mariners here, I guess.
Okay.
And if they jump up to, you know, I'm looking for a silver lining in the case that they do finish fourth. I'll be like, hey, well, at least I got them in that random game we did on May 1st.
I'll take the fourth place Red Sox.
Okay. That's a good one. Now I will take... So just to update everybody, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 teams remaining on the board.
Now, just to be clear, these remaining teams are the teams where we look at them in the standings and we say, we don't buy that.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't buy that. I think the Tigers are an interesting pick here. I'll take the Orioles. I'll take the Orioles here. I'll take the second place Orioles. God, the AL East is nuts. The AL East is nuts. Okay, what do you got?
I will take, that's a bad pick. I will take the second place or the first place Texas Rangers, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause now obviously if you're Pirates fans, you're just like, what the fuck, guys? Okay. I'm taking the Phillies here because even if it's one, like, I don't feel great about the Phillies getting up to second. So I think that's probably still 1 point. So I'll take the Phillies in fourth.
So remaining on the board, New York, Detroit, Pittsburgh, St. Louis. I will take Pittsburgh.
All right. All right. Then I'll take St. Louis then.
Okay. I will take Detroit.
Okay. So I take the Yankees. The Yankees are the last pick, which is interesting, right? Because in some ways does that contradict what we were saying before? That,
well, I'm not, I think, sure. We're just betting against, like, we just envision a world where the Yankees just figure it out. Like, that could totally happen. It happens every year. You know, right. Why would you bet against the past?
Right, right. So that is our draft. Hopefully it wasn't too complicated. I thought that was a fun concept. And yes, Yankees have not finished in last place since 1990, last time they finished in last. So that is why they ended up being our final pick. We'll keep track of that as the season goes along. We wanted to finish up with an email. You can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. That's BARBcast. His email comes from Logan. He says, hey guys, my name is Logan and I love your show. Oh, thanks, Logan. I know Jordan just recently moved into Reds country and it got me thinking about regional fandom. I am a Reds fan owing to the fact that I went to Kentucky for college and it was the first time I had ever been an hour drive away from an MLB team. Just watching the team and being able to go to the ballpark regularly made me fall in love with the guys on the team and the franchise in general. Do you guys ever get bit by the regional fandom bug or a dance with the one you're with type situation? What can the Reds do to win over Jordan's heart, or what can the Yankees or Mets do to win over Jake's? Thanks for the great pod, guys. Logan. Love this question.
Great question.
Love it. And so there's a lot of competing factors here. So Jake, take it away.
So we talked to Mark Keurig about this, right? The idea that now that Jordan and I are in the room, we're in the clubhouse, we're working in baseball, that a piece of your fandom gets stripped away. Mark talked a lot about that. I think Jordan and I feel that a little bit less than the average person. Jordan, I think, even less than me. where like your Mariners fandom is pretty much intact, if not stronger than it was 4 years ago, right? Whereas for me, my Orioles fandom has definitely been reshaped over the last couple of years of being around the team and being around baseball as a whole. I cannot envision a world in which I begin to pull for the Yankees or the Mets or feel an emotional connection to either of those teams. And I think that is actually due to the amount of time I am now spending around them, where I am at Yankee Stadium or Citi Field like 2 or 3 days a week in the clubhouse around the players. And I think the more you see of them at that distance, the less you feel like they're superheroes, if that makes sense, right? When you're rooting for a team, it's easy to view these people as like infallible. But when you're around them every day, I'm not saying that they're like bad guys, but they're just people. Like they take shits and they take showers and they make jokes and they drop their phones. Like it's easy. It's much harder for me to like see them as something to root for just by being around them all the time. And so in fact, yeah, I don't think I root more or less for either of those two teams than I did in the past. What about you?
Yeah, no, I think that's an interesting point. For me, I think the wild card element for me, for the Reds, first of all, I mean, it's not going to happen. So Logan, the first thing you're saying is like, yeah, there's no version, although maybe that's the fun conversation is what would have to happen. My thinking for you is like, it would have more to do with what our current favorite teams would do to drive us away than what another team could pull us in that direction. I think that is much more realistic as far as like right. something that these other teams could do to pull us in.
And we root for people. So like once Carlos Rodon is healthy and off the IL, we've known Carlos for a decade, he gets on the mound, I'm rooting for the Yankees in a given start where he's pitching.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's certainly something that's changed. Like, I'm not saying it has not changed the way we look at the game and getting to, you know, have both the access and also the responsibility to kind of cover these teams as best we can. But I also, it's important to me too, to also not lose that, right? Like for me, it's like, that's part of why I love the sport. And like part of course, the Mariners season last year was so awesome. And I'm glad I still had that connection, even though I had kind of had this job because I got to enjoy last season the way that I could. At the same time, like I totally can understand Logan's situation, right? Where it's like, there was never anything beforehand. And his question of, do you guys ever get bit by the regional fandom bug? It was opposite for me growing up, right? You know this in DC. I was actively rooting against all the DC teams, much to the chagrin of my dad, who I'm sure is listening and remembers this, when I would be like, oh my God, the Wizards are a joke. Oh my God, the Washington football team is a joke. Oh my God, you know, even the Nationals were super lame when they showed up. Like, I didn't care. I didn't want to root for any of those teams. I thought it was more fun to pick something random. Of course, that's why I ended up a Mariners fan in a lot of senses. So in that sense, I can't totally relate to it. As for the Reds in particular, it's a little more realistic because unlike the Yankees, who are an Orioles rival, like the Reds couldn't be farther removed from the Mariners. Now, at the same time, except for all the trades. But at the same time, yeah, of course, I've grown more appreciation for some of the players on the team being around them more, but not. It's in a very different context. So
do
I love
think
the question,
you have
but.
Yeah. A deeper appreciation for like Reds fandom than you did before.
Yeah. I mean, again, there's definitely, it's still early. You know, I got here last summer and I've only, you know, been to, you know, a game, a series or so, but I felt this too when I was going to Pittsburgh often because that's where my fiance was going to grad school. Like these fans, I mean, and you're seeing it now with the Pirates as they're playing well, like they care so freaking much, dude. Like these are fans that just really, really, really care, even with ownership just continually insulting them and giving them reasons to drive them away. These fans really fucking care. And Cincinnati, of course, a great baseball town. So that has been proven true for sure.
Whereas like where I am, the fandom is very different in New York.
It's all over the place. It's all over the place. Most casual, and you have the complete psychos that are more passionate than any other fan base. So it's like a much wider range. So yeah, it is an interesting question.
Now, I had this in college. Like, I started watching the St. Louis Blues in college. You know what I mean? Mm. This happens to people. So I totally get it. I think Jordan and I just happen to be too close to baseball for this to happen to us baseball-wise.
At this stage, yeah. Yeah. No, I totally agree. I would definitely feel it more in other sports. But a great question. I wouldn't count on anything like this happening anytime soon. You can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. Thank you to Logan for the email. Thank you to Chris Tyler for producing this. Thank you, Jake Mintz, for doing this podcast with me. We are going to Go find out. You're going to go to Yankee Stadium today, find out how long Aaron Judge is going to be out for. We'll find out today if Bryce Harper will indeed be in the lineup later on. But we appreciate everyone listening. You can get your Barbiecast merch, podswag.com/baseball. Leave us a nice rating or review. Let us know. What do you like the show? You want more people to listen to it? Then that's a good way to do that. We really appreciate the support. Been super fun going 3 times a week. We will be back, of course, on Wednesday with another episode. But until then, enjoy the next 2 days of ball. We'll talk to you soon.
SiriusXM Podcasts.